Blog Talk Radio.
My apologies for my lateness, everyone. Out to dinner with family and friends, of course. This is the Feuersteins Fire American Soccer Show here on Blog Talk Radio. You can join me and my fellow writers over at Once a Metro and the rest of the SB Nation family of websites. You can get your daily ring from me there as well. I'm going to activate the chat room, and I hope everyone is having a very good evening. And, of course, we got to talk about what happened this past Saturday night over at BMO Field in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, as the MLS Cup Championship Final played once again, rematch between the Seattle Sounders and Toronto FC, as both sides gave it their all. Both sides were playing very, very tough and very, very hard, and obviously, everybody, this was a very hotly contested matchup for the Philip Anschutz Championship Trophy. Once again, it looked like this was going to be another nil-nil fest. I mean, both sides were active. Both sides were attacking. Both sides were doing their best to beat each other's keeper. And you know what, folks? At the end of the night, at the end of the 90 minutes, no extra time, no penalty round shootout this time. It would be Toronto FC winning their first ever MLS Cup championship and as well as the first Canadian club in MLS to win the league title. So we just have to say, and once again, we just have to say that this was, in my opinion, another fantastic final, and both sides gave it their all. Both sides gave it their all, and that's all you can really ask for. Stephen Fry, let's be honest, he had another heck of a match until, of course, the 67th minute. Until Jozy Altidore buried that chance. And all you can do is just give kudos. Give kudos and definitely a lot of props to what is going on over there. You know, you just have to say that that both sides, like I said already, gave it their all. Both sides gave it their all, and they tried their best to go out there to discuss and to take on for that championship. Were we going to see the Sounders get a second consecutive MLS Cup, or was it going to be Toronto FC's day? And at the end of the 90 minutes, it was Toronto's day. Jozy Altidore, Victor Vazquez in second half stoppage time, they were the ones that put Toronto FC ahead, and they're the ones that they were going to just find ways to go out there and to perform at their best. And they did so. They did so. And that's all you can really ask for. And now the 2017 MLS season is officially in the books. And we've got a lot of stuff going on during the off season, because now, there's a lot of question marks that are going to be asked, and a lot of question marks to see who will be heading over to the new expansion club, Los Angeles Football Club, as already trades are being made, wheeling and dealing is going on. And all you can do is just sit back, relax, and watch what's going to happen for these next couple of days. So, this is, I apologize. And just to let everyone know, of course, you know, I was down in, I'm currently down in Florida. Currently down here in Florida. My mother's birthday, of course, and happy birthday, Mom, as always. My lovely mother, we went to come down, my wife and me, of course, spending the week down here in Florida, half the time with my parents, the other half with my in-laws. So I just want to say it's going to be a fun time, as always, down here. But still, though, all you can do is just sit back, relax, and just discuss what was going on here. And once again, you got two of the best teams in the league. Toronto in the East, Seattle in the West, and who knows if we're going to get them in 2018 as MLS Cup finalists once again. We'll have to wait and see what's going to happen down the road. But still, though, I just felt this was another fantastic match. Bono did a very good job in net for Toronto. Stephen Fry, you know, once again, just absolutely, absolutely just doing the best that he can. And all you can do is just sit there, admire what has happened, what did happen, and, you know, Fry, you, like I said before, you thought you were going to see a replay of the final from last year, but both sides were going for it, both sides were attacking, and that's what you're hoping for. You were not hoping for another defensive game, but once again, both sides were going for it. And you just got to say both sides gave you a heck of a match. But at the end of the day, this time Toronto FC bests the Seattle Sounders. And the Seattle Sounders, they won't go quietly. You know they're going to attack. You know they're going to try and get a championship. You know they're going to try and go for it. You know they're going to do it. So all you can say is, you know, guys, just a great job from both sides. They gave us an entertaining final. And you know what? This time, though, it was Toronto. It was them. And they move on to take on, of course, to defend their MLS Cup championship. And next for both of these sides will be the CONCACAF Champions League draw to see who will advance from the round of 16 all the way to the final. Once again, Seattle, Toronto will be in pot one along with FC Dallas, the New York Red Bulls. Colorado Rapids are going to be in pot two. So that's going to be interesting to see where that's going to be. And, of course, being drawn along in that first pot with the Liga MX side. So, you know, once again, just a great final. Once again, a very solid final. Both sides earned to be in the final, and it was great. Tonight, recorded interview with Steve Jenner from All In Sports. But first, let's go to my good friend in Seattle, of course, Dave Clark from Sound of Hearts, SB Nation colleague. Dave, you know, I know didn't go as repeat champions in the MLS Cup final, but still, though, once again, I thought Schmetzer did a great job with the starting 11, with his tactics. I thought they attacked well, and Fry was up to par once again in this match.
Oh, I'd actually disagree with you. I don't think they attacked well. I don't think Schmetzer did well with the tactics. I thought that part of what went wrong was that Greg Vanney outcoached Brian, which doesn't happen often, but you looked at the poor touch that Roldan and Ladero had on the day, and some of that was just because they couldn't get through Osorio and Delgado and Bradley. Those guys were pressing very hard. That middle was very crowded, and there was just no width from Seattle. They didn't. I mean, yeah, they got a shot off, on or a shot on goal off. Finally, it just took them a, you know, almost two MLS Cups to do it. But it wasn't the type of performance that Seattle had been putting forward for the past 5 or 6 months, and so it was disappointing to see in an MLS Cup final to have what was probably their worst game since maybe May.
Wow. That's interesting. Now, I noticed before the match got started that Vanny did change up the formation a little bit. Did that really hamper Schmetzer and what Seattle was trying to do?
I think it did a little bit. I think that, again, that crowded the midfield. I think that that also gave Victor Vasquez a little more freedom. And I think Vasquez took advantage of Svensson being a little bit slower. Seattle wasn't able to stretch the defense. It was interesting because against Houston in both legs, even while 11 versus 11, they tried to feed Will Bruin balls to run onto, and they weren't able to get those kinds of passes off, whether it was because of Will Bruin's runs, which I didn't see as much decisiveness from him, or again, Ladero, Dempsey, and then Seattle's Victor Rodriguez didn't really they didn't have key passes. You know, they didn't have attempted assists. They didn't look decisive on the day. And when so many players look off, to me, that says something's wrong tactically. If I was a neutral, I would have liked it because, I mean, Toronto put on a good show. Stephen Fry seemed up to the task for a vast majority of the game. But as Stephen Fry said, you know, they can't bend that much without breaking, and they just bent too much. Christian Roldan said as well that or said something to the similar effect that, you know, they had a bad day. And part of it, you know, part of their goals for 2018 are to make MLS Cup again, but to host it at home. Some of what they think they can improve on is having 60,000 plus cheering them on rather than 30,000 cheering against. I don't know how much of a difference that made, but again, you know, the Seattle's attack, which had looked so good for so many months, petered out. Now, admittedly, Toronto and Seattle were two of the top three defenses in the league this year. So the fact that one of the offenses struggled in a final probably wasn't a surprise.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. When they went through the first half scoreless, did you think that at least Seattle had an opportunity to maybe, don't say, you know, trying to repeat what happened last year, but did you feel comfortable or at least a little bit confident that maybe Seattle might get lucky in the second half? Because it was scoreless through the first half.
Yeah, particularly with that second half. I mean, I would say the only time I gave up hope was once the second goal went in. You know, what was that, an extra time? That's when I was like, well, okay, I have resigned myself at this point. But 0-0 at the end of the first half, I was fine with. There were plenty of tactical changes that Schmetzer could have made. It took him a while to make those. He sat on an entire sub. One sub came in at the 90th minute, so really only the first sub, Jordan Morris, was in with enough time to make an impact on the game, which kind of surprised me. Schmetzer, over his year and a half now, I haven't checked the numbers recently, but it's something ridiculous, like plus 17 in the second half. He's normally a great second half coach. He makes adjustments. And we didn't get it. We didn't get that kind of performance from the team, which is, again, it's disappointing. I wouldn't say it's a disappointing year. I mean, seventh in the Shield standing, second in the West, winning the West in the playoffs, making an MLS Cup back-to-back. You can't look at the season as a failure. I just look at MLS Cup as a disappointment.
I agree with you. I really do, because this was a hell of a year for Seattle. Once again, I felt that they were attacking, doing well with formation, of course, whatever Schmetzer does. You know, like I said, I've always felt confident with him, and I believe in what he does. And sadly, in this, like you've said, in this MLS Cup final, he just didn't seem to make the necessary tactical changes that he need to make. He didn't adjust with what Toronto was giving him. But still, though, and I do agree, this has been a good season for Seattle, and unfortunately this happened in the MLS Cup final. But still, you still have a solid team, no doubt about it. And you're probably going to have Svensson going to the Swedish national team for the World Cup, I'm assuming, over in Russia. But other than that, you still got Dempsey, you got Jordan Morris, you still have Stefan Fry. You've got a solid club that's going to do a lot of damage next year in the West.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The next year situation looks pretty good right now. They're a team that will obviously use their discretionary TAM, new mechanic that just came out. It's going to be fun. There's plenty of reasons to look at the Sounders and think that that this core, without significant changes, still has maybe two seasons left, which is pretty good. I mean, heck, at this point, I wouldn't be surprised if Seattle and Toronto meet in the MLS Cup next year.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think they're clearly one of the top teams again, and that's, you know, that's all you can hope for in an off season, is to enter the next season with those kinds of hopes and joys. So it's fine. They only lost Tyler Miller in the expansion draft. The declined options and other out of contract situations. Jovan Jones is off to Darmstadt in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
Lamar Nagel and Brad Evans are pursuing free agency in the very limited free agency that is MLS.
Mm-hmm.
And Brian Meredith, one of the two backup goalies, they're trying to retain, because if they don't, they'd have essentially no veteran backup goalie. But all in all, that's not a lot of losses. And I don't think you can look at the team and think that it needed to clear house or anything like that. There's the Jovan Jones situation was already there. They knew that. But they're probably looking at a winger, like at the high end of the salary, the DP slot that they do have available. They're looking at a forward or a winger. At a significant TAM expenditure, they're probably looking at another midfielder and maybe a left back. And they have the resources to bring it in. It'll be interesting to see what kind of additions they make.
Yeah, very true. But you should also be excited for this coming Monday, and that's, of course, the CONCACAF Champions League. The draw will be this coming Monday, and it all depends on which club Seattle could face. Probably not the Rapids, because they'll be in the pot two, you and Toronto and the Red Bull. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can't be the Rapids in the first round. They've got a methodology that blocks from the round of 16 to keep – two from
right.
the same nation out. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I kind of want Herediano because Leo Gonzalez is still playing there and he's a former Sounder, so that'd be kind of fun.
Yep.
But outside of that, you know, I'm looking forward to it. Seattle has made Champions League runs in the past, and just
mm-hmm.
today Garth Lagerwey made it clear that their goal is to compete. And to ideally win the Champions League. Part of that will mean that he needs to add talent earlier in the season. You know, by the end of the year, this team was great. At the beginning of the year when we were chatting, they weren't doing so well. So if they're going to compete in Champions League, they need to come out heavy and fast. And they can't wait on their significant signings. If they're going to add a Kelvin Leerdam level talent in 2018, they didn't need to do it in January.
Yeah, I agree with you there, and that's going to be interesting to see who they're going to get drawn with. And I agree with you, not for the round of 16, but if they do get drawn in the same section of the brackets of advancing to the quarterfinals, you could see a Sounders-Rapids matchup if it does happen. between both Seattle and Colorado, but we'll have to wait and see what happens on Monday. Overall, Dave, like I said, I agree with you. You know, unfortunately, it's MLS Cup was a disappointment, but it really was a very positive year for Seattle. And Jordan Morris will be a lot better for next year. I know the injury that he had before subbing into that match, into the final, was tough. But I'll definitely see, you know, would love to see a Dempsey-Morris tandem up front next year for the entire year.
Yeah, Morris had a couple injuries. He missed basically 3 months at the end of the season. And then for the first 4 months of the year, he was battling injuries as well. So we didn't really get to see the Jordan Morris that we had that won him the Rookie of the Year. It'll be interesting. His third season is probably going to do wonders for determining who exactly Jordan Morris is. Is he the talented wonder kid, or is he just another good American striker?
Well, we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen. But if anyone can definitely get the best out of Jordan, it would be Deuce. I think Deuce would definitely help him out to become that big-time player that I think you believe he can be. And I think he can be as well. I mean, after all, he did get the Gold Cup winning goal in this past Gold Cup against Jamaica. So I believe that Jordan Morris can improve himself, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's funny. We have to remember he tied for the Golden Boot in the Gold Cup. Disappointed.
Yep.
in his year, and Jordan Morris, he had a bad year, and he's up for the U.S. national team man of the year with Bradley and Altidore and Dempsey and the guy that's going to win it, Pulisic. You know, his bad year, he's still up for, he's still one of the five best American soccer players, and that's really a tribute to his talent level. Somebody that's capable of doing that there's a lot of potential there still, and there's a lot more that he can become. And I think it's going to be great to figure out exactly who he is. I have a lot of belief in him. I have a long-term bias because back when I worked in retail, he was a regular customer of mine, but I definitely enjoy watching Jordan when he's on because it's fun. And that's what soccer is, right? We want to have fun.
Exactly. And let me tell you something. 2 years ago, I shouldn't say 2 years ago, actually last year, when Seattle came to play the Red Bulls, I enjoyed watching him play. I mean, I was very curious to see how he would work out. I was curious to see how he would time his runs. I'll tell you, man, Jordan Morris, he really impressed me that night coming over to Red Bull Arena. When he just made dangerous run after dangerous run, peppered Luis Robles. And I know Seattle didn't win the match at Red Bull Arena, but still I was impressed with Jordan Morris of how he got himself into lanes, finding ways to get at the end of balls. And even though he didn't convert, but still he was very dangerous for that entire match.
Yeah, that was we didn't see as many of those this year, but again, next year it's going to be a blast. I think we're going to see, as long as January camp doesn't wear him out, you know, we're going to see good things from him.
Exactly. Dave, listen, thank you again for doing this. I know it's tough being on this end of the MLS Cup final, but still, though, I know, like you said, you were very happy about the year, disappointed about the final result of the Cup final, but still, Seattle's going to be a dangerous side next year. You know it, and I know it, and I can't wait to see what they're going to do in 2018. I'll talk to you next year. Have a happy new year, and take care, sir. And also, Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Merry Christmas, Daniel. Thank you.
Thank you. That's Dave Clark, Sounder at Heart, SB Nation colleague, as talking about, of course, what was going on with the Seattle Sounders as they fall to Toronto FC by final of 2-0. They will not repeat as MLS Cup champions. Now joining me on a recorded interview, Steve Gennaro, the executive producer of the All In Sports Talk online radio station. over in Toronto, as of course was over at BMO Field to get everything going on. Great conversation with them. Not available live tonight. I was able to do a recording, and here it is right now with Steve Gennaro of All In Sports to talk about. And let's not this MLS Cup final. Let's not forget Four Eastings Fire is also on the All In Sports online radio station. Here is Mr. Gennaro right now. And this is the Four Eastings Fire American Soccer Show. Once again, the 2017 MLS Cup Final Review. Toronto FC defeats Seattle Sounders by final of 2-0. Joining me, of course, is Mr. Steve Gennaro, the All In Sports web radio sportscasts. You can hear myself as well as Stephen Brandt from the Yellow Card Podcast and every other show that is a part of All In Sports. Steve, that was an impressive matchup to see what Toronto can do. 2-0 to the home side, and they finally, the first Canadian MLS side to win the league championship.
It's been a very exciting weekend and a crazy couple days in the aftermath of it. I thought Toronto played fantastic in the final. Rarely in a cup final do you see one team dominate another team by such a significant fashion as I thought Toronto did. I really thought they were significantly better than Seattle in the final. And, you know, to the winner goes the spoils. They looked a lot different, I think, than they did earlier in the month when we saw them play against New York Red Bulls. You know, you saw both legs of that match really closely, and so did I. This was a very different-looking Toronto FC team from the one we saw just a month ago.
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought Toronto actually played a lot better. They played like the favorites that they were supposed to be in the entire playoffs up to the final, and Toronto once again dominates. But I have to say this, though. You had to be nervous because Stephen Fry played pretty good in goal for Seattle, and you had to have in the back of your mind that, uh-oh, here we go again. This could be either another nil-nil through regulation, or is Seattle going to be that lucky because Fry's in goal?
He was incredible. He was absolutely incredible. I watched the match back yesterday or the day before. You know, after seeing it on video, I wanted to change my vote because, you know, we get to vote for the MVP of the match. The media does on game day, and I voted for Michael Bradley because I do think that he was the best player for Toronto FC on that given day. But when I watched it back in video after watching just the first half alone, I thought, you know what, Stephen Fry is probably the best player on the pitch. In the first half, he made 4 clear-cut saves that I counted that pretty much would be goals on 99% of the keepers in the league. At the very least, 1 or 2 of those go in. And, you know, if Toronto FC is up 2-0 at halftime, you know, that game probably gets out of hand and goes 4-0 or 5-0. That's how good Toronto FC was on the day, but also that's how good Stephen Fry was. He was spectacular, and I tip my hat to him, and all the players did as well, and he spoke to him afterwards, and even today at the end-of-season meeting, the end-of-season press conference, all the players still had plenty of good things to say for Stephen Fry and the game that he played, because he was the difference maker last year. If it's not for that save that he makes, you know, last year Josie Altidore scores the MLS Cup-winning goal, and this year Josie was able to get it, but I mean, it took a lot of work. It took 67 minutes of really complete domination before they were finally able to get one through. And once they got that one, you kind of had the feeling that was going to be it for the night.
Is your voice still hoarse after this past Saturday? I mean, my goodness.
Yeah. I mean, it was a long night. After the match had all been done, and after, you know, all the TV and radio visits and spots had been done, and talking to all the different people that we did with our due diligence, there was a little bit of celebration. You know, I've been a season seat holder since the very beginning of Toronto FC. I've been with the club since day one, and I'm deeply connected with all the supporters groups, the people you see in the South End. So I'm a journalist, but I'm also a fan, and I don't hide that or pretend to shy away from it. I try to be as neutral as possible, but at the end of the day, you know, I was there through all the lean years and all the bad years. But once the camera light went off and I'd done the news spots, and once I did my last radio spot, I made sure that I met up with a lot of the South End supporters and had a good time and enjoyed it.
So you're one of those that did the Danny Dicchio seat cushion toss, right?
Yes, absolutely. You know, it's really interesting. I don't know if you'll enjoy this. I certainly did. At the parade yesterday, so it was a big parade in the city of Toronto. You know, thousands of fans showed up. It was a cold Monday morning, -5°C. So we're talking, you know, in the mid-20s, basically. And there were thousands of people lining the streets for TFC. And there in front of the stage, one lonely fan was holding up his seat cushion. That day of the game, they gave them away. That was the giveaway, right? To all the first whatever 10,000 fans that came to bed, they all got the seat cushion, and everyone threw them on the field when Dickie scored the first goal at home, right? So someone kept theirs, and sure enough, they brought it out to the parade.
Wow, man, that's hilarious. Oh, my God. I thought they were all gone. But, hey, someone was smart enough not to throw it. I mean,
that person probably still has all their Star Wars toys from, like, the 1980s still unopened, up on the shelf somewhere in the house. They're a better collector than you are. I live in the moment.
Yeah, I understand what you're talking about, definitely. I mean, I know what you're talking about. That's hilarious. And just to keep on going with that, I mean, I remember watching that game. I know probably you're on, it was either CBC or probably TSN, but we had Fox Soccer Channel down here in the States at the time, and all of a sudden, as soon as Danny Dicchio scored, all of a sudden there's a nice panning view of everybody, every Toronto fan, just picking up their seat cushions and just throwing them like Frisbees on the field. It was great.
Yeah, they've since changed the rules around what they will and won't give away. They learned their lesson. And actually, my favorite part about that, I saw Danny on Saturday, and we talked for a little bit. And a lot of people don't remember about that match is shortly after scoring the goal, Danny Dicchio actually got a red card as well and got ejected from that.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. I remember that match. That was hilarious. It's the funniest thing I've ever seen, and it was great. I mean, you never thought – I mean, no offense, obviously, because, like, when did Canadians start throwing stuff on the field like that? That's unheard of. It's not hockey. No.
There's been a couple four moments. I mean, that one's pretty funny in retrospect, but, I mean, there's also the moment that, you know, again, in very poor form, when the last time Toronto City played the Champions League, when they hosted the LA Galaxy here in February.
Yes.
The match was played at the Rogers Center.
Uh-huh.
Whatever you want to call it, and a fan tossed a beer at David Beckham. So,
yes.
All four moments, and you're a baseball guy too, so you'll remember in the playoffs, it was the last season when an Orioles player had a beer tossed at him by a Blue Jay.
Yep. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, yeah.
We have our moments too where we're not at our best, but the Dicchio one's a fun one.
Yes, it is, and I'll always talk about that one with anyone that wants to know about what's it like being up in Toronto FC when you're talking about the seat cushion game. But I'll tell you, that was absolutely fantastic. I remember that. Of course, let's go back to the match, and Victor Vazquez, right place at the right time. Josie nails the front of the near post, goes right, rebound to Dicchio, Dicchio. Yeah, he played. No, Victor Vazquez, of course, right in front, and he just bunts it right in there. Pass Fry, and it's 2-0, and it's all over, and Toronto starts celebrating. So, you know, obviously Toronto hasn't been around. It's almost been, what, 10 years almost that Toronto's been in the league? And, you know, after all the poor starts that they've had, and they finally, you know, Montreal had some success going to the CONCACAF Champions League final. Vancouver's had some form of success here and there, but still Toronto will always be the first club in representing Canada, because you are the first club in Canada to go to MLS, and finally that moment officially happened at BMO Field.
Yeah, you know, so this is season 11, and it was, I'm not going to lie, I mean, there were lots of dark moments along the way for the franchise, the organization, even the city's connection to it, and certainly for the supporters. But I think 2012, if we go back just a few years to 2012, I think that's kind of when it bottomed out, you know, and that's when a lot of people left and they walked away, and this went from being a franchise who had solid support in the downtown core and a stadium and good ownership to a team that looked like they might be in trouble. And we'd seen MLS in the past have some problems with franchises when the fan base walks away. So early on, everybody seems to be very excited about this club coming here, and then a couple bad years of mismanagement. It was a tumultuous time. But, you know, full credit to Tim Leiwicki. I mean, there's a name that needs to come up here, right? Because MLSE, Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment, the ownership group here in Toronto, who owned Toronto FC, they went out and they got Tim Leiwicki. And, you know, he came in and I guess you could say he solidified the franchise and the brand. Now, the first couple of decisions maybe weren't the best ones. There was the bloody big deal that brought Jermaine Defoe here.
Oh, yeah.
That really didn't work out. And there was Ryan Nelson as the head coach, and that didn't really work out. But I'll tell you what, Tim Bezbachenko is the general manager. And if it was a Greg Benny as the head coach, and Michael Bradley, Josie Altidore, Sebastian Giovinco, and then the extension on the stadium at BMO Field, and the new key training grounds that they built, and the franchise went from being you know, really a bit of a laughingstock, I think, around the league to now one of the premier franchises in all of North American sport, not just Major League Soccer.
No, I agree with you. I think what they've done, they've recognized that they can't be... I mean, obviously we all know that the Leafs have been there forever and ever. We know what they're involved with the Raptors and the NBA. And, of course, you know, I don't think they've recently purchased... I'm assuming they purchased the Blue Jays from Rogers, of course, the owner who owned the Blue Jays for such a long period of time, I guess, and who passed away a couple of years ago, I think it was. And, you know, just to see Toronto... not just representing Canada and Canadian soccer, of course, but, you know, one of the top clubs you would like to think in this league that, you know, the MLS was looking for to, you know, be one of the top sides, not, you know, not just within the league, but in all Canada right now. And so far, they finally did. I mean, we all thought Montreal Impact was going to beat Club America. We all thought they were going to, you know, that goal to make it 2-1 in the second leg at the Olympic Stadium. And the run they had in the knockout stages, of course, of that year, that tournament, we all thought Montreal was going to get the first international cup, or at least the first big cup in Canadian soccer history. Not so, unfortunately. But Toronto, obviously the number one team in all of Canada, it has to be said.
Yeah, and I mean, their focus now is beyond being the number one team in North America, and even above that in CONCACAF, because today at the year-end press conference, so all the players come out, we talk to them all, we talk to Bill Manning, the president, we spoke with Tim Bezpachenko, head coach Greg Vanney, everybody, the only thing they're talking about is they're thankful for the celebration, they had a great time, they really enjoyed themselves, but now they're already turning their focus to CONCACAF. They want to win Champions League this spring. They know how difficult it's going to be. They know that no MLS team has ever won it before, and that's where the focus is going towards. They actually announced today that they've changed their training camp schedule, that they'll be going out to Los Angeles for a couple of days, then back to Toronto, and then out to Mexico. And they'll spend 10 days in January, February, training in Mexico, playing exhibition matches against Mexican teams, bringing two sides, well, with the Toronto FC players to Mexico. So this is a bit of breaking news here for you, for your show, as a way of preparing immediately so that they're ready to go for that first leg of the Champions League, and that they're taking the competition very serious. They also said today that the new TAM money, the targeted allocation money that Commissioner Don Garber announced last week would be available to all teams, that Toronto FC, they said today they're going to look to spend that money, all of that money, to bring in at least one and maybe even two players to help them to win the Champions League. So they're looking for veteran players from South America or from Europe who can do a job, who are a little bit grittier and tougher and, you know, ready to go play on the biggest stages, because their goal now is already looking forward to winning CONCACAF Champions League.
Yeah, I don't blame them at all. I mean, look, you're trying to go after bigger... bigger things, bigger tournaments, bigger cups. And that's the number one thing that I think every club wants to get into. And obviously, that's what it is. So, I mean, I don't blame Toronto at all. And I don't blame what they're going to try and do. And hopefully everyone does that, because I know Toronto is also going to be a part of that new... Well, it used to be the Desert Diamond Cup that's going to be back in Arizona. I know they're a part of it. But who knows what else is going to happen. But still, though, just got to say that... you know, just like everyone else, you know, they want to go after the big, big trophies. You want to win the league, you want to win the Open Cup, or at least for Toronto, if you won the Canadian Championship, the Amway Championship. But still, though, hopefully it gets restructured when that Canadian Premier League does come into play. Now, let me ask you this. With the Canadian Premier League already being formed, and the Canadian Premier League coming in, I don't know when it's going to start, but when it does begin... does Toronto remain in Major League Soccer? Do they go to the Canadian Premier League permanently, or do they just send a team to the Canadian Premier League and they remain in MLS?
So Toronto FC will remain in MLS. That is 100% certain.
Mm-hmm.
The role of Toronto FC in the Canadian Premier League still is to be determined. So when I spoke with Paul Byrne, who's the commissioner of the Canadian Premier League, last year, their initial... plans for the Canadian Premier League was not teams in Vancouver at all. They would prefer to do so with separate ownership that doesn't include the Major League Soccer owners. So
okay.
Some autonomy, because they don't want to get into a pro-rel discussion with MLS, or maybe they don't want to be seen as a second-tier league to that. They want to be an autonomous league. And so most of the ownership groups that we're hearing about, again, there's only two announced owners that we know of so far,
mm-hmm.
But most of the ownership groups that we're hearing about tend to be Canadian Football League owners using their Canadian Football League stadiums. That tends to be a little bit of what we're hearing mostly. Not a lot of information has fully come out. Now, President Bill Manning from Toronto FC has said from the very beginning that he doesn't understand why the Canadian Premier League needs to have a team in Toronto that's not part of Toronto FC, because fans who want that type of football or soccer can just come watch TFC2, which is the USL team that's currently in place in Toronto. But if you ask Canadian soccer fans why that is, I think the answer is quite simple. There needs to be a space for Canadian soccer players to play, to grow. Toronto's the biggest market in Canada, or the third or fourth largest media market in all of North America. It needs to house a team, and that team needs to be an important part of the Canadian Premier League. And if you need any more proof as to why that's the case, just look at today in the expansion draft for MLS. Raheem Edwards is selected from LAFC to go to LAFC, and now there's talk that LAFC may deal him. But if they're going to turn around and deal him, there's really only two teams they can deal him to, and that is Montreal or Vancouver, because it counts as an international roster spot against any other club's roster. So as long as Canadian players count as foreign players or international roster spots on any MLS team other than Montreal, Toronto, or Vancouver, there is a significant need for the Canadian Premier League.
All right, so like you've already said, Toronto, they win the first MLS Cup championship in their history, the first cup for a Canadian MLS club, and now they're going for CONCACAF glory, and we'll see what happens after the draw this coming Monday, so it should be interesting to watch. Steve, thank you again for your time, as always, and I'll talk to you next time. Take care, sir.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Before I go, I just want to say one thing, and I think you'll appreciate this, that all season long I watched every game this Toronto FC team played, home and away. I saw every single minute of the season, and I want to say that those two games against Red Bull, I think, were the two most difficult and challenging games. No one gave TFC more difficulty this season than Red Bull. So next season, I mean, if they keep their core together and want to push forward, they can certainly be, I think, the biggest contender to knock TFC off next year.
We'll see what happens. Thanks again, Steve.
Cheers.
Steve Gennaro, of course, the executive producer of All In Sports radio station over in Canada, in Toronto. And once again, as you know, the 40 Scenes Fire American Soccer Show is a part of that network, as well as the Yellow Card podcast from Stephen Brandt. So go ahead and check out the other shows that are going on over there. Now that the 2017 soccer season has officially ended, this past Saturday, of course, USL has a champion with Louisville City. The NASL has a champion with the San Francisco Deltas, even though they will no longer be around after only in 1 year. NPSL is done. Elm City Soccer Club is the NPSL champions. PDL and everything else going on. We are in a period right now that we don't know what's going to happen down the road now, or at least the short end of things, because there is a lot of uncertainty. Pardon me. There's a lot of uncertainty right now in the game for us here in the United States. Some are going to say, well, everything is just fine. Everything is, there's nothing to see here. Some will say, well, there should be some form of concern here of what's happening. But the truth is, in my opinion, and this is what I believe in, I'm not, saying anything that probably no one has said before or maybe hasn't said yet. But the truth of the matter is this. We are in a certain period of American soccer here in our country. Ever since the men's national team, failed to qualify for the World Cup, there has been a lot of things, being broadcasted, flying around. There's a lot of things going on that, let's be honest, we didn't expect to happen. We never, ever expected to happen. And to see what has happened with our national team, with basically Sunil Gulati no longer going to run for re-election as president of U.S. Soccer, all these candidates running for that seat, it's one of those things where, you know, there's a lot of question marks, guys. There's a lot of question marks right now. We don't know what's going to happen here. We don't know what will happen MLS-wise, even though Los Angeles Football Club will be coming into play next year to make it 23 clubs, 20 all together for the U.S. Open Cup. And, you know, we could be seeing a shift, a change, depending on who is going to be the ones to take over. We have this Kathy Carter, who works for Soccer United Marketing, of course, the marketing wing of Major League Soccer. We have Eric Winelda. We have Kyle Martino. We have Paul LaPointe. We have now Hope Solo joining in on the fun. But we don't know where that's going to go, and many other candidates out there, what we're going to see here with this U.S. soccer presidency campaign. You know, there's a lot now coming into play here. Forget about, you know, everything that what you want for those of you that want ProRel. And I understand that's how you feel, if, you know, this is the only thing that's going to make us into real soccer leagues and blah, 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 and yada, yada, yada. And I understand that. But the point is that, and I'm not poo-pooing this. You guys know I don't poo-poo anything like this. I want to see all these things happen for our leagues, for the health, for the game in our country. But the truth of the matter is this, is that that right now is not the issue. And I know it's one of the issues that's going to be discussed. And I'm not disagreeing, like I said, I'm not disagreeing about that issue. But right now, even though it's one of the issues that's going to be discussed, in my opinion, that's an issue that is right now kind of far away. What we are seeing here, the uproar that we have never seen before in our lives, whether you're a fan of the sport, you cover the sport, or you're just, you know, popping in to say hello, there is a very serious discussion going on right now. There are a lot of things that, let's be honest, there are, you know, uproars about, nothing to see here again coming about. All the discussions and the talking points that we have been trying to make here that is coming around, and it's just, in my opinion, we are right now either in a state of flux or we're in limbo. There is a black hole overhead the U.S. Soccer Federation at Soccer House in Chicago. We are in a state of flux right now. And while we had a very good final here on Saturday, the truth is this, that what is it about the future for the game in this country that we feel is going to get back to where we were between the 2002 World Cup all the way to the point of, let's be honest, after beating Panama in Orlando for Russia the next couple of days before they lost in Trinidad and Tobago? Where are we after that? That is the biggest question mark we have right now for the game in this country. And if some of you think, well, it's not as dire as you make it out to be, we don't know this. There has to be some concern here. There has to be some legitimate concern about where the future of the game is headed right now. I can give you a couple of answers that I think you might like. Right now, our national team, if you bleed in the youth players right now, like Josh Sargent, like McKenney, Tyler Adams. Okay, look, I can forgive Horvath for the, for the howler that he gave up to Portugal. As of right now, 2018, it's time to bleed in the newer players. Right now, I just in my opinion, you want to give Altidore a game, that's fine. You want to give Michael Bradley a game, that's fine. You want to give Clint Dempsey a game, that's fine on the international stage. The truth of the matter is this. It's time to bleed in the younger generation. It's time to bleed in those players that have shined in the under-17s and the under-20s, not just in the CONCACAF tournaments, but in the Youth World Cups that we've seen them do so well. Fine, you only get up to the quarterfinals, but still, though, I still think it's a strong place to be. And I'm not saying I'm accepting mediocrity. I'm not accepting failure. But somewhere down the line, somewhere down the road, we're going to have a breakout year and have these kids get to either the semifinals or at least get to a final of these Youth World Cup tournaments that FIFA has. And I think the best place to start that is the Olympic qualifying tournaments. I think it's time to have the number one importance is the qualifying for the Olympics. We haven't qualified for two consecutive Olympics. And I think it's time to do that. It's time to prepare ourselves for these kids. Now, granted, the Gold Cup will probably be the first tournament that any of these kids see. And that'll be two summers. But obviously the Olympics will be, the Summer Games will be the most important thing that our kids are going to be playing for a possible gold medal. Because right now that is the number one target for the future of our national team. World Cup qualifying, we'll have to wait and see what's going to happen. Sadly, at the moment, it will be in Qatar for 2022, as we will miss Russia for next summer. But all I can say is that if we're going to see these changes being made, if we're going to see these changes being seriously done, we can't just yell at each other till we're blue in the face. We cannot scream till the cows come home. What we need to see, to be honest, what we need to see, we need to see improvement. We need to have calm and cool conversation. Screaming and yelling at each other, those days are over. I know some of you feel that's the best way to get your point across, but guess what? That only leads to more division, and that only leads to more decisiveness. We all have to grow up, and it's time to start to grow up. We have to grow up right now, and we got to be calm about it, and we got to have solid dialogue and solid conversation so that we can all finally come together and be on the same page. Because if we're not, we're going to repeat this, and we'll have a bigger failure on our hands than we had between the 1950 World Cup all the way to 1990, and we cannot allow ourselves to get there at all. So with that in mind, I want to thank my guests tonight. Of course, Dave Clark, Sounder at Heart, of SB Nation colleague, Steve Gennaro of All In Sports Radio. And thank you, gentlemen. Congratulations again to Toronto FC winning the MLS Cup Championship. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. Join me next this coming Monday as we finish off the 2017 Feuerstein's Fire season. As always, please enjoy your football. Thank you. Have a good night, everyone. Talk to you next time. And bye-bye for now.